I chose one verse from the Bhagavatam. This is from the third chapter of the sixth canto. And this is, Yamaraj instructs his messengers. And this is text number 24. And I'll just read the Sanskrit. Tomorrow we'll officially begin the weekend ceremony in glorification of Krishna's holy name. But to set the mood a little bit, we have chosen some nice verses from the Bhagavatam that helps us go deeper. And this is spoken by Yamaraj. Translation. Therefore, it should be understood that one is easily relieved from all sinful reactions by chanting the holy name of the Lord and chanting of his qualities and activities. This is the only process recommended for relief from sinful reactions. Even if one chants the holy name of the Lord with improper pronunciation, one will achieve relief from material bondage if he chants without offenses. Ajamil, for example, was extremely sinful, but while dying he merely chanted the holy name, and although calling his son, he achieved complete liberation because he remembered the name Narayan. Srila Prabhupada's purport is quite lengthy, so we'll speak a little bit and also read a little. Purport. In the assembly of Raghunath Das Goswami's father, Haridas Thakur confirmed that simply by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is liberated, even if he does not chant completely inoffensively. Smarta Brahmanas and Mayavadis, of course we might add people in general, do not believe one can achieve liberation in this way. But the truth of Haridas Thakur's statement is supported by many quotations from the Srimad Bhagavatam. In his commentary on this verse, for example, Sridhar Swami gives the following quotations. If one always chants the holy name of the Lord with great devotion in the evening and in the morning, one becomes free from all material miseries. Another quotation confirms that one can achieve liberation if one hears the holy name constantly, every day with great respects. Anudinam idam adarena srinvan. Another quotation says, Shvardam kirtanam dhyanam haram abhuta karmanaha janma karma gunanam cha tarartha kila chetasam. One should always chant and hear about the extraordinarily wonderful activities of the Lord. One should meditate on these activities and one should endeavor to please the Lord. That's from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.25. Sridhar Swami also quotes from the Puranas, Papan Shayam Chabhavati Smaratam Tamahar Nisham. One can become free from all sinful reactions simply by remembering the lotus feet of the Lord day and night. Tasmad sankirtanam Vishnor jagam mangalam aham sam mahatam apikauravya vidya kantika niskritam. All these quotations prove that one who constantly engages in chanting and hearing the holy name, activities, forms, and qualities of the Lord is liberated. As stated wonderfully in this verse, Etavalam agraham niranayam pumsam. Simply by uttering the holy name of the Lord, one is free from all sinful activities. And there is a verse in the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kaler Dosha Nidhi Rajan Asti Eko Mahagun Kirtana Eva Krishna Sya Mukta Sangam Parambajet. This verse is a summation of everything that's been said before, especially in the 12th canto. The 12th canto describes the characteristics of this particular age. And what are those characteristics? One misery, one difficulty, one calamity after another. This age is saturated with hardships, difficulties, materially, and it impinges even on those who practice spiritual life. Even in spiritual circles, these material miseries seem to enter and cause difficulties. So it is everywhere. It's just like the air. There's no place that the air is not. So similarly in this age, you can expect that this age is full of difficulties. Personal, familial, social, communal, national, international, interplanetary, interuniversal. So it is just one difficulty out of another. So this verse, kaler dosha nidi. When you think of an ocean, you think of something vast, something unlimited, something very deep, something that no one can measure or even understand. So this verse is kaler dosha nidi. Nidi means ocean and dosha means faults. In this age, there is an ocean of faults. It's just the way it is. We don't really have to take time to list these things because we don't have time. Not because of the limitation of the class, but because it's just you can't extend. You can't really go through what is the calamities that are being. And it's only going to increase. That's the nature of this age. So you can expect that. You can expect. Don't be surprised when it happens. It's just the way it is. One calamity after another. This is a very hard age. It's a difficult age. People are inclined to material life, sense gratification, and personal self-interest, that's all. And if people become a little bit self-extended in their interest to others, it has a personal motivation also. This is the age. This is the way it is. You can't complain. It's like complaining, why is the winter cold? Because it's the winter. Why is this age full of faults? Because it's Kali Yuga. It's just the way it is. It'll only increase. But then, kalir dosha nidi, asti, echo. Echo means one. Asti, there is one. What is that? Maha gunaha. Maha means great and guna means benediction. This benediction is not small because it can destroy and dissipate all the difficulties of this age. It's like when something is completely dark and there's no sign of light anywhere and you cannot see anything. And there's no glimmer of light anywhere in the darkness. You feel completely lost. You feel like there is a sense of fear that automatically comes with complete darkness. But if some bright light comes, all of a sudden everything becomes clear, everything is seen nicely, and no, the darkness is gone. So that bright light is Krishna's holy name. Goloka Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. So this, and then what is the result? Asti Ekam Mahagunaha. What is that Mahagun that's being Kirtana Eva Krishna's, yeah. Krishna Kirtan. So one should see that to dissipate all the problems in this age and to purify the heart of all material desires and to reach the lotus feet of the Lord in devotion, one should develop an attachment for chanting. Chanting not a ritual, chanting not a requirement, but chanting as a means for happiness, for enthusiasm, for purification. You made it, thank you. Okay. So, when we think of chanting the holy names of the Lord, Sometimes we just push it as part of whatever else we're doing. Oh, it's time for kirtan, it's time for japa. But this verse, and Prabhupada says, one should always chant in here, constantly. Why is it necessary? Because of the nature of this age. It's so difficult. Therefore, one should always constantly bring in the light of Krishna's mercy through the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Every age, there's something that Krishna has empowered in order to purify people in that age. He descends personally as the Yuga avatar, but he also enunciates the Yuga Dharma. And in every age, there's a Yuga avatar and a Yuga Dharma. Dharma means the religion of the age. So in this particular age, what is it? Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalon Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Gatir Anyata. Why do we do deity worship? Why do we read the scriptures? Why do we associate with devotees in different for different services? Why do we all do this? To keep our consciousness clean and pure. This is necessary in order for us to actually chant the holy names of the Lord. The chanting of the holy names of the Lord goes through stages. There is the offensive stage, there is the clearing stage, and there is the pure stage. In Sanskrit, it's called Namaparad, Namabas, and Sudanam. Sudanam is the pure name. When the pure name descends, then the whole place becomes the spiritual world. There's nothing material left. It's all purified from the holy name. But the word aparad is a very unpleasant word. It's a very unhappy word. The word, if you study the word, you'll find the word radha is in there. R-A-D-H-A. But before radha is apa, that which is not radharani, or that which is not bhakti. So if you see, we see radharani. She's standing next to Krishna, and she has her hand like this. Right? So what does this mean? Blessings and one other meaning. Stop. Don't go any farther. You're not in the right consciousness. You can't come here. So she's giving blessings to those who are in the right consciousness and stopping those who are in the wrong consciousness. So that wrong consciousness is aparad against Radharani. And what is that wrong consciousness? Of course, we go through what is against Radha, and they are the offenses. So one should carefully, with great attention, understand what the offenses are and avoid them as if you would avoid a person who has the plague. In other words, you get as far away as you can from these things. Why? Because they contaminate our bhakti and they block our progress in devotional service. So one has to be very careful to free ourselves from these things. But back to the glories of the holy name. So in this age, we read verse after verse, statement after statement, glorification after glorification, principle after principle of how powerful Krishna's holy name is. It says once, just once, not one mantra, one name chanted purely. One cannot estimate enough, one cannot commit enough sinful activities that the holy name of one, that's once chanted cannot free one. That's how powerful Krishna's name is. Because Krishna's name is Krishna. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha Purna Sudo Nitya Mukta Abhinna Tvam Nami Namino. Abhinna means different. Abhinna means no difference. This verse illustrates that the name has nothing to do with anything material. It's made up of five letters of the alphabet, KRSNA. But those who see Krishna's name as simply another chanting of the mantras from the Vedas, or it's just a very nice way to do different types of puja. It's a nice, it's nice, but they don't see the absolute nature of Krishna's name. Simply are approaching the name in a material way. And so, and therefore, Krishna says, Dyayatam mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajami aham. If you approach me with love, I reciprocate accordingly. If you approach me in a materialistic way, you see me that way. Whatever you see put in front of the mirror, it reflects the object in the same way. And so, when we chant Krishna's holy name, or we hear the sound of Krishna's holy name, we should know that's Krishna coming in sound. It's Krishna coming in sound. It's that powerful. And therefore, there's one verse from the Brihat Naradiya Purana. Hadir nama, hadir nama, hadir nama, eva kevalam, kalon nasti eva, gatir anyata. I think it was quoted here in the previous verse. In other words, this verse is making a very powerful statement. No other way, no other way, no other way. Now, why is the verse structured in such a way as it repeats thrice the name and no other way? Because according to Vedic literature and meaning within the literature, if you say something once, one can challenge that and bring in other arguments. If you say something twice, that reduces that tendency. And if you say something three times, that's an absolute principle. There's no argument. Everything is as it is. So therefore, that verse is making a point. Thrice means there is no other way. There is no other way. There is no one. Not by karma, not by jnana, not by yoga, not by dharma, not by, you know, chat. There is no other way. In this age, to actually reach purification of the heart and fulfill all of one's desires, then chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. And Prabhupada makes the point that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself spoke this verse just to make the point. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead wants to establish something in a strong way, he speaks it, or he performs it in such a way that people understand that because he has done it, it's an absolute principle. Now, the Vedas are vast, and there are many scholars of the Vedas, and there are many different types of scholars of different sections of the Vedas. There is the Samaveda, there's the Yajurveda, there's the Atharvaveda, there is the Rigveda, there is the Mahabharata, there are the Puranas, there are Itihasas, there is the Ramayana, there is the Upanishads. So the Vedas are divided into two sections, Shruti and Smriti. Shruti is the actual Vedas, which makes up the four Vedas plus the Upanishads. And the corollaries of that are the Dharma Shastras. And the supporting factors are the Itihastras and the Puranas. But Srimad Bhagavatam is Smriti. And so is Bhagavad Gita, Smriti. It's a commentary on the Vedas, which brings out the essence of the Vedas, because no one can understand the Vedas in this age. It's not possible. So Lord Brahma makes a point. He says, Iti sodasakam namna kalikamasanasanam nata parateyopayo sarvavedasu drishyate. He says, After searching through all Vedic knowledge, one cannot find a more sublime process for self-realization in this age. He makes the point, Kali Yuga, in this age, Kaler Doshani, then chanting of these 16 names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sometimes Vedic scholars will challenge, where in the Vedas is the Hamaha Mantra mentioned? This is it. This is Kali Santara Upanishads. And the Upanishads are the Shruti, the Shruti parts of the Vedas, which are the original Vedas. And this is spoken by Sri Brahmaji himself. Just to illustrate that out of all Vedic knowledge, and of so many things, there's rituals, there's pujas, there's homas, there's principles of giving and charity, there is mantra chanting, there are various types of homas, austerities, rules, regulations, restrictions. There are very types of forms of worship, unlimited types of worship. Types of worship in different sectors of society by different people for different purposes. The Vedas are so vast. But then, no one can figure it out. Therefore, the Acharyas tell us that the essence of the Vedas is to glorify the Lord in devotion to the Lord. And in the essence of that glorification, as it says here by Dhyamaraj, devotional service beginning with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is the ultimate religious principle for the living entities in human society. Who is Yamaraj? He's a Mahajan. He's the Lord of Death, but he's been empowered to speak transcendental knowledge. He has his own sampradaya. Not a sampradaya, he has his own following. He is authorized to teach religious principles. And he is speaking these things to his followers, that the essence of everything in the Vedas is bhakti. And the essence of everything of bhakti is Hare Krishna. So when we get right down to the essence, if there's some scholars that will challenge us, all right, study the Vedas. Come up with different conclusions and understandings. But then again, you have to know, what are those statements that surmise and, what we say, distill the essence of the Vedas? Otherwise, you can read the Vedas and you can come out completely confused. What are they saying? This is recommended, that's recommended, this is recommended, this is recommended, that's recommended, do this. So many, many, many rules and regulations. That's why one of the offenses to the holy name, the eighth offense, is to somehow consider all these other rules, regulations, rituals, pujas, and they call them satkarmas. All these things, if people think that any of these or any one of them is equal to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord, that's an offense. The holy name is superior to everything in this age. And the thing is, it's so easy. It's so easy. That's why Vedic scholars and others who really try to understand more deeper what is the truth of spiritual life challenge the devotees. And here it says, this one verse, this is spoken by Yamaraj himself. He says, bewildered, because they are bewildered by the illusionary energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yajñavalkya, Jamini, and other compilers of religious scriptures cannot know the secret. These are great personalities. Confidential religious systems, cannot know the secret. Confidential religious Swiss systems of the 12 Mahajans. They cannot understand the transcendental value of performing devotional service or chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Because their minds are attracted to the ritualistic sermons mentioned in the Vedas, especially Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, and Rig Veda, their intelligence has become dull. Great scholars, right? Thus, they are busy collecting the ingredients for ritualistic ceremonies that yield only temporary benefits, such as elevation for material happiness. They cannot be attracted to the Sankirtan movement. Instead, they are interested in Dharma, Karma, Moksha, and Artha, Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha. We have been fortunate. We haven't gone through all that. Prabhupada has come and said, chant Hare Krishna. Well, we take it, yeah. But we don't even know what we've been given. Mahaprabhu has come with this jewel. And he's just handing it to everyone. Here, here's the means for happiness in this age, elevation to the spiritual world, and perfection of all of one's desires. One can fulfill all one's desires through becoming self-realized. So this is what we've been given. But then, in order to approach the holy name, one has to purify their consciousness. Chanting of the holy name purifies the consciousness. But we have to perform other activities which are corollary in order to keep our consciousness from going down. And that's why we worship the deity nicely. Seeing the deity is none different from the Lord. Archi Vishnu Siladi Guru Shum Nomarchi. The deity and the Lord are none different, as the name and the Lord is none different. The deity of the Lord is none different. Srimad Bhagavatam is the incarnation of Krishna in sound. Transcendental sound knowledge. This knowledge is Krishna in the form of literary incarnation to give us philosophical and spiritual guidance towards the absolute principle. And what is the last verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam? It's posted up on one of these green signs. I think it's the one on the very end. Somebody can read that one. It says, 12th canto, 13th chapter, verse number 23. It's there. Yeah, read it. I can't see it from here. Somebody read it. Nice and loud. After going through the entire Bhagavatam, glorification of Krishna and his different incarnations in Krishna in Sri Vrindavana, and summarizing all transcendental knowledge in a very sutra-type form, Srimad Bhagavatam ends with this. Congregational chanting of the holy name is the essence of everything. So we come right back in full circle. We start with the holy name. We end with the holy name. So this is it. But we need to purify our consciousness. That's why Srila Prabhupada mentions here in one verse, he says, if I can find it here, it's in this same section. Okay, I think I found it. He says, especially in this age of Kali, Sankirtan alone is sufficient. If the members of our temple in different parts of the world can simply continue Sankirtan before the deity, especially before Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will remain perfect. He doesn't say become perfect. He says remain perfect. There is no need for any other performance. Nevertheless, to keep oneself clean and happens in mind, deity worship and other regulative principles are required. Srila Jiva Goswami says that although Sankirtan is sufficient for the perfection of life, the archana or worship of the deity in the temple must continue in order for the devotees to stay clean and pure. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur therefore recommend that one follow both processes simultaneously, which is called Pancharatra-givitti and Bhagavad-dharma. We strictly follow the principles of performing deity worship and sankirtan along parallel to lines. This we should continue. So there is the supporting factor. But we have to understand, it's all about becoming purified so we can chant the holy names of the Lord. Because everything is there in Krishna's holy name. Okay. So there are so many verses throughout the scriptures to illustrate how glorious the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Srila Sanatana Goswami has said something very wonderful. He says, all glories, all glories to the blissful holy name of Sri Krishna, which causes devotees to give up all other conventional religious duties, meditation, worship. When somehow or other uttered even once by a living entity, the holy name awards him liberation. The holy name of Krishna is the highest nectar, is my very life and my only treasure. Like that. And Rupa Goswami has composed Namastikam, and there are Shikshastikam prayers. It's all in glorification of Krishna's holy name. So we'll be trying to understand how we can purify our consciousness and avoid those things which take away our enthusiasm for chanting, and at the same time open the door to more and more deeper forms of meditation on the holy names of the Lord. Sometimes people say, do you guys do meditation? We say, yes, it's called japa meditation. Or what we say, nam meditation, meditation on Krishna's holy name. So the scriptures actually conclude that one should chant satatam, kirtan tayo tilmam. One should chant 24 hours a day. But it's not possible unless we actually purify our consciousness and gradually practice the mood of chanting more and more like that. But Mahaprabhu is so kind that by worshipping Mahaprabhu, hearing about his performances of Sankirtan, because all his pastimes are always all centered around chanting the holy names of the Lord. When Sri Nityananda Prabhu was here, he performed Sankirtan in such a way that it was never performed before. When he was with Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, and Lord Chaitanya said, you stay in Bengal and you preach, I'm going to try to spread the glories of the holy name here in Lord Jagannath's abode. Because there were so many Mayavadis and smart Brahmins and other ritualistic worshippers. The Lord wanted to purge all that and bring people to the proper consciousness. So he said to Nityananda, you preach there. But Nityananda was feeling so much separation from Mahaprabhu, he couldn't not be away. He couldn't stay away from Mahaprabhu's association. So one day he came, along with the devotees, when they were performing the Ratha Yatra. And of course, Mahaprabhu was so happy to see Lord Nityananda, and so they were together, sharing their love to each other and spreading the holy name. But at one point, Lord Chaitanya said, you're here. What about Navadvip? Go to Navadvip and take your devotees and glorify the Lord's name there. People are needing there. So Lord Nityananda, with a heavy heart, not wanting to disobey the Lord, but of course wanted feeling separation, he took the Lord's instruction on his head, gathered his gopals, and decided to go to Navadvip. But how did they go? They did it with kirtan. So they were chanting and dancing, and they got lost. That happens. Not materially. They just didn't know which direction to go in because they were so absorbed in kirtan. And then they had to ask people, which way is it to Navadvip? Oh, hi, 6 miles that way. You have to catch the road. Go that way. So they turned, changed directions, got on the road, started to begin kirtan again. They were chanting and dancing. And Lord Nityananda was... Imagine dancing and chanting with Lord Nityananda. You can't imagine. It's just so beautiful. He's Balaram. And so he, after some time, again, they realize, we don't know where we are. We don't know which way we're supposed to go. And then they asked again. Someone said, oh, hi, 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 20 miles that way. Catch the road along the Ganga. Follow the Ganga, and then you will reach. So they did. Finally, they reached the outskirts of Navadvipa, the house of Raghava Pandit. And they had kirtan. Raghava Pandit came out along with his sister, Damayanti. And they were so happy. Raghava Pandit offered Lord Nityananda a garland. But Lord Nityananda, you know, you never know what he's going to do. Just never. He said, make me a garland of kadamba flowers. He wanted kadamba flowers. You ever seen a kadamba flower? Yeah? No? Oh, it's the most beautiful flower in the world. You've seen, right? It's an orange ball. It's got all these little shoots that are so packed together. It just looks like one piece. And it's a beautiful, it's either yellow, it's like this orange color here, or it's like a bright yellow. So beautiful. If you get a Gatamba flower, you don't want to give it away. And it's very fragrant. So, Raghava Pandit said, Nittai, this is not the season for Kadamba flowers. Nityananda said, go in your backyard and see what you can find. So he went, and on the lime tree, he found Kadamba flowers. Of course, nor Nityananda's mystic power. He, after getting over his shock, he picked all the flowers and made a beautiful garland, and he gave it to Lord Nityananda. And then someone was saying, we smell Damanaka flowers. Now, Damanaka flowers grow only in the area of Jagannath Puri. And who wears Damanaka garlands? Mahaprabhu. He would only take Damanaka flowers. So everyone was thinking, Mahaprabhu must be here somewhere. But Lord Nityananda could see, because it says, wherever Lord Nityananda is performing kirtan, Mahaprabhu is personally present. So he was in his unmanifested form dancing along with Lord Nityananda in kirtan, but no one can, only one or two of the most elevated of all the Vaishnavas could actually see Lord Chaitanya there. And finally the kirtan continued, and it went on and on and on, and it went on for 3 months. 3 months. No one did anything but chant and dance. They became so empowered by the holy name that they were doing the most... Have you ever been to a kirtan where it's just like high energy and everybody's ecstatic? You never know what's going to happen next. You know, somebody will, you know, fall on the ground, do a backflip, or somebody will dive, somebody will knock somebody over. We used to do all kinds of crazy things. All these sannyasis would be like a whole bunch of, they all throw their dandas up in the air at the same time. Or they just start fighting with dandas. And it's just like, kirtan, you never know where it's going to go when it's ecstatic. It's just mad. So this mad kirtan, they started dancing with trees. They were uprooting trees and dancing with the trees. Small trees. But some of the big trees, they were walking up the side of the tree, going out on the branch and going to the end of the branch and dancing on the twig. And the twig was not breaking. And devotees were dancing in ecstasy on the end of the branches. And some of them, in their madness of kirtan, would dive off and yell out the names of the monkey soldiers in Ram's army. I am Angada. Choom! I am Sugriva! Choom! And it was just mad here. So this went on for 3 months. And some of the villagers started to feel the energy of the holy name, and they started to come. And then the children of the villages. And it says that they also danced for 1 month. And that's Lord Nityananda's kirtan. Well, that just shows you, this is Vrindavan Das Thakur explains this in Chaitanya Bhagavat. He gives a narration of this particular. Oh, Mangala Devi, Haribo, welcome, welcome, welcome. Jai. And that's Nittai Nataraj. His name is Nittai Nataraj because you watch him. He just dances and dances and dances. We're just talking. He is the best dancer in Chicago. Okay. Anyway, Mangala Devi, come sit up here. Oh, we got some Chicagoites too here. Govardhan Leela, welcome. Okay. Thank you for coming. TK? Okay. She doesn't speak English. Tota? Chota. Tota? Tota. Okay. Hare Krishna. So, this is Lord Nityananda's kirtan. It just goes on and on and on. So we can pray to Lord Nityananda, please invest me with some of your transcendental energy so I can become inspired to dance and chant in the holy names of the Lord. Because when you're in kirtan, there is no other world. That's if we're absorbed in the holy name. So just like when we chant japa, the mind wanders. And then when the mind wanders, although the mantra is still going on, we're not really getting the benefit of the mantra because we're not listening closely to the sound. We're getting something, but because we're not hearing nicely, we're missing the ecstasy of chanting. So same with kirtan. One has to very carefully absorb oneself in that sound and express that sound from the heart. It's called kirtan yajna. It's a yajna. So yajna means a sacrifice. What is two aspects of sacrifice? Is the sacrifice of hearing and the sacrifice of chanting. So in order to perform the sacrifice properly, one has to simply absorb themselves in the sound. Now you can hear the external part of the sound, where the sound of the holy names is there within the atmosphere. But if you really tune in to the sound, you go deeper into the mood of the chanter, and you can taste the bhakti that the chanter is offering. And then you start to go deeper into your own chanting. So that's a process of applying the principle of hearing in the most, what we say, complete way, in order to get the essence of that. And then the expression is comparable to the hearing sound. Then the expression will be in the same mellow of the sound of hearing. So it's all based on hearing. But one is feeding the other as it goes on. Hearing, chanting, hearing, chanting. So we're putting the mind into the sound of hearing and chanting the holy name. That's like offering the ghee into the fire of the yajna. The yajna, the fire is the holy name. The ghee is our hearing and chanting like that. And the result is, you know, Krishna appears in the sound of his name. Therefore it says that when kirtan is offenseless, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personally present. And he showed that, he demonstrated that many times during kirtan. When kirtan, he descends into the kirtan and he dances along with the devotees. So this is the jewel that the great acharyas have handed us, because they have captured that jewel from the Lord himself. So this Sankirtan movement is the highest spiritual benediction that we can possibly understand. And therefore, the scriptures say one can only underestimate the glories of the Lord. It's not possible to overestimate, nor is it possible to even to estimate, but to speak of overestimating. So this is Sri Harinam Sankirtan. Any questions before I continue? I have some more, but I was thinking, I saw some eager faces here. Yes. Radha Vinodi.
I read in the Rupa Gita Maharaj's book that I've read in Gorgovinda Maharaj's book that every yuga had a certain mantra called Taraka Brahmanam or Tarak Brahmanam. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Every mantra has?
Every yuga has some certain mantra. And and how it connects to that, I know that every yuga has a certain dharma, but I don't know what this name means, this Tarak Brahmanam or what it is, because I searched on internet, because in the book it wasn't written what it means.
It's mentioned in the Dwarpara Yuga. It's Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That was the mantra for that age. I worship the Supreme Personality of Vasudeva, who is situated everywhere. That's what Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is translated into. So that was the Maha Mantra in that age. But the Yuga Dharma was very costly and very, what we say, elaborate deity worship. People were very expert at performing deity worship. And what we have in terms of the deity worship is 20% of what they did at best. I mean, the Brahmins were so qualified chanting the mantras, and the decorations of the deities were so gorgeous. Beautiful temples were built in Dwarpa Yuga just to glorify the Lord. Some of them are still there. So yeah, we can't compare to that type of worship in this age. But they also chanted Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, but it wasn't the Yuga Dharma.
And what was the function of that? I don't really catch this point.
The function of the mantra?
Yeah.
Just like we perform deity worship to purify ourselves so we can do the chanting of the holy name. So they're performing the chanting of the holy name so they can purify themselves to do deity worship. It's supportive. But it's the, what we say, the outstanding recommended form of mantras. And so every age has a particular mantra. And every age has a Yuga Dharma, and every age has an incarnation of the Lord. All three of those appear in each age. Sri Devi.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj. In the lecture, Your Holiness said, one can fulfill all one's desires through becoming self-realized. But when we become self-realized, we won't have any desires other than to please Krishna.
We'll have spiritual desires. So there's two ways to fulfill the desire. One is to eliminate it, and two is to fulfill it. So when you eliminate a desire, the desire is fulfilled. So it eliminates all material desires and fulfills all our spiritual desires. But no one can be desireless. It's not possible. The soul is full of desires, but those desires are all in relationship to their service to Krishna. How to serve Krishna, what mood to serve Krishna in, what association to serve Krishna in. In other words, it's called Siddha Pranali. One's spiritual identity and the execution of one's service in that pure spiritual identity, it's still full of desires, but it's all in relationship to pure bhakti, for Krishna. You study, you know, Ananda Vrindavan Champu by Kavi Kanapur, Rupa Goswami, Ujwala Nilamani, these all describe what are the spiritual desires of the pure living entities. So everyone has desire. You can't stop desire. You just have to. Material desires are a perverted reflection of our spiritual desires. Because we're not trying to fulfill material desires, spiritual desires, we're in association with Krishna's external energy. And because we're in association with this external energy, we create desires based on the interaction of that energy. The principle of ananda, or happiness, exists within the soul. And it's manifested in this material world that's trying to enjoy various types of sense gratification. In the form of, you know, material acquisitions or just plain sensual stimulation. But it's all a reflection of the reality. It's not the reality because this material body is not us. It's just something that's given to us because we've come to this material world. So all these material desires become purified and nullified through the process of bhakti. So that's what it means to fulfill all this one's desires perfectly and completely. Jai Panchatattva Ki Jai. So what are the desires that we have? The ultimate desire is love. We're trying to find love in this world. So we create different relationships with different types of living entities in this world and try to find some fulfillment in that relationship. But there's no perfect relationship in this world. It's not possible. It's not possible because it's based on something that is artificial, the body. It's based on something that is the body. But on the spiritual level, two people can have a perfect relationship when they work together to serve Krishna and they serve each other in serving Krishna. That's all. Then that's perfection within the material world based on our relationship with Krishna. Mm-hmm. You follow?
Yeah, I'm trying to. I'm also wondering, Guru Maharaj, if you can explain a little bit about how to distinguish between really spiritual desires and material desires, because they can masquerade as spiritual desires when actually they're very subtle.
You just check
material.
The instructions of your spiritual master and check the instructions of the scriptures. If they're not in line with these things, it's material, that's all. It says eat, but eat prasadam. Sing and dance, but not in a discotheque. Have sex, but for babies. And to bring those babies up in spiritual life. Like that. So, yeah, these are all what we say activities of the body, but when they're connected to the process of devotional service, that means they're under the guidance of the spiritual master. That's spiritual. But if they're outside of that, or they're done in the wrong way, then the material energy enters in and makes it somewhat spiritual and somewhat material, or completely material. Just like I want to serve Krishna because I want to be happy. That's a combination of material desire and spiritual activity. We serve Krishna because we want to please Krishna, and happiness comes automatically. You don't have to try to make, but because we don't really understand the principle, or don't have complete faith in the principle, we still are motivated by our own happiness in whatever activity we do. But that's bhakti, which is tinged with karma. And sometimes we want to be great and have some great knowledge or some philosophical understanding. So that's also a material desire because it's tinged with the desire to be learned, to be great, to be known as a spiritualist. So the subtleties of material desires can manifest in the form of one's bhakti. That's why if you read Nectar Devotion, also Jiva Dharma, these are books, and especially Manashiksha. Last year we did Manashiksha for the disciples meeting. You can find that the finer forms of material contamination comes out in the form of different kinds of subtleties. The desire for fame, the desire for prestige, the desire for honor, desire for position, desire for pecuniary gain through devotional service, like that. So one can perform devotional service in order to increase one's material desires, material happiness. But one cannot actually remain fixed in that, because after a while, one of the two will overcome. Either one will get purified and move away from that, or one will continue to manifest these things, and then devotional service will become less and less. It depends on your association.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Association has the foundation to move us one way or the other. Okay, anybody else? Any other questions? Yes, Anuradha? All the sadhus are on this side. Where's the sadhus? No sadhus. I know, all the men, you know everything, so you don't have to ask any questions. Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Hare Krishna, thank you for lecture. I have a question regarding, we mentioned enthusiasm and japa. And
as opposed to routine.
And how it is...
Mangala Devi, can you understand? She can translate for you. Yeah, sure. You go sit over there. She's from Orissa. And that's Lord Chaitanya's personal family. Yes.
For example, how we can, in the association of devotees, when we chant in the certain places, like with devotees, how to say, being enthusiastic about chanting, when we lose the taste that something happened, what's the reason why we lose the taste sometimes, enthusiasm for chanting together?
Well, there's different reasons. One is, the most obvious reason is offenses. Therefore, one should, that's why we recite, and I know you all do it here, every day you recite the 10 offenses to the Holy Name as part of the morning program. That's not just to fill in the little time period so we can go on to the next thing. It's good to meditate on those 10 offenses. That's why Prabhupada introduced the 10 offenses in the morning program, and whenever he gave initiations, most of the time he always had the 10 offenses recited. Because we don't know what these 10 offenses are and how to avoid them. Or if we just have an idea, and because it requires some explanation. Each of the offenses require an explanation. So if we're committing the offenses, we won't get the taste for the Holy Name. It doesn't mean we should give up chanting. It just means we should try to get rid of the offenses and continue on with our chanting. Another thing is that the tenth offense to the Holy Name is to maintain material desires even after understanding so many instructions. So year after year, we're hearing the glories of the Holy Name, we're engaged in chanting the Holy Name, but we're still looking to the material world for satisfaction, for fulfillment. That will cause us to not to taste the nectar of the Holy Name. That's called the I, me, and my offense. What does that mean? I still think I'm this body, and I still think that I, by satisfying the senses of this body in a material world, I can be happy. So one is still looking towards the material world. One may have material desires, and that is not a disqualification to perform devotional service. When we try to fulfill material desires, then we were curtailing our progress in bhakti. We're slowing it down a lot. So yeah, that's two things, offenses and still looking towards the material world for happiness, satisfaction, success. One has to understand, that's why the Shastras very, sometimes you see in Prabhupada's lectures, he's always talking about the futility of material life. I mean, if you listen to Prabhupada regularly, every lecture, practically every, why? He's reminding us, don't try to be happy here. Don't try to be happy here. Here's where your happiness is. You can't be happy here. It's just the way it is. It's just this, it's a material world. The material world is designed for us to suffer, that's all. This place is designed for suffering. That's all. So we may have material desires, but we can fulfill those desires in the spiritual way by engaging in devotional service and so on. Making friendships and developing loving relationships with the devotee satisfies the heart. We need that. We need to have loving relationships with other Vaishnavas. That's available through this process when we actually follow the etiquette of Vaishnav culture. Then we don't have to look outside to find friendship with the non-devotees. We may interact with them, but we find our heart becomes satisfied in the association of Vaishnavas. So that's a foundational principle that keeps us connected to the process of devotional service. If we don't develop loving relationships with other devotees, we will try to find it somewhere else. Because you need love. And it's not, we can just love Krishna and forget everybody else. It's not possible. Krishna's, everything about this, about Krishna is manifested through his devotees. That's why the success of devotional service is really based on two principles, Vaishnav Seva and Sangha and Namruchi, those two things. Mahaprabhu emphasized that. So, yeah, we can lose our enthusiasm if we're still looking outside for fulfillment. If we catch, we should catch ourselves. Oh, that's Maya. That's Maya.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Anything else? Sri Devi. Let's
see. Guru Maharaj, I personally have seen that in the course of chanting the holy names, while certainly, definitely, I have matured, but I've also seen that life has gotten more and more and more difficult at some levels. So how does, are we supposed to think that Krishna is putting one more test to draw us closer to him, or we are doing something wrong, and how to correct that in that case?
Well, as you, if you're progressing in devotional service, you're developing the qualities and the intelligence to deal with all the challenges and apparent difficulties that come. And therefore, you're able to keep moving forward. But the difficulties will always be there until you become a pure devotee. Then when you're a pure devotee, then you get another kind of difficulty. But it doesn't really matter at that point, because those other kind of difficulties is people might criticize you for what you are. Or what are the pure devotees' difficulties? Sometimes they have to, you know, perform great austerities in order to perform their devotional service. But for us, what is the difficulty? Getting up in the morning? Practice. And we're going to try this weekend to, what we say, fortify our chanting with some other things that I think will be helpful, that you could add to your chanting, which will strengthen your... We will open up a greater form of mercy. We want to get as much mercy as possible. So, but never get discouraged. If you're in association of devotees, you can somehow weather the storms of the Maya's attacks. But when you're outside the association of devotees, or if you don't have association with devotees who are fixed in Krishna consciousness, then it becomes difficult. Then the mind sort of tries to rationalize and tries to get out of the difficulties when the solution might be right before you, just by association of devotees. One example was Niranjan Swami. He told me, you know, we do counseling. So people come to the sannyasis. This happens all the time for some counseling, personal problems. That's part of the service. So he was telling me people were coming to him. As he preaches in the Ukraine, he preaches in Russia, now up in that area. It's a lot of problems, people coming, problem this, problem that, problem. So he decided, for 1 year, I'm going to give every class on chanting the holy names. That's all. That was going to be my topic in every class. So he did that for 1 year. He said, after 1 year, 50% of the problems reduced. Our problem is we're not tasting the chanting of the holy name. Therefore we have so many problems. As soon as we develop a taste, that sweet taste, ruchi, the problems are still there, but they're incidental. They're just like little inconveniences. That's all. Prabhupada said, bring in the light. Darkness goes. We're emphasizing the positive. Anything else? Any other questions? Yes.
I've read about one pastime of Srila Prabhupada which confused me a bit. It happened in Australia, and as I remember, the Prabhupada's room was just above the temple room, and devotees said that Mangala Arati was disturbing Prabhupada's translation. And devotees suggested Prabhupada that maybe while he's there, they could chant japa instead of Mangala Arati Kirtan. And Prabhupada humbly accepted and said that japa or kirtan, it's the same or it doesn't matter which one, but to chant the holy name. And I was wondering, because I've all the time heard that kirtan has a bigger effect, and I don't know how to understand this.
I'm not sure of the incident you're referring to. Prabhupada, according to your understanding, Prabhupada said, do either one, kirtan or japa? Well, Prabhupada understands it's absolute. It's, what is it? It's chanting the holy names of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did both. He also chanted japa every day in front of Tulsi. And so, for one who's fixed in chanting, they look forward to both. Don't answer this question, but how many of you really look forward to your japa? Think about it. I mean, we all look forward to kirtan, right? But how many did you actually think, or you think, 16 rounds, I got to start from zero again today. That's because we're not approaching the holy name in the right way. Mm-hmm. Approach the holy name in the right way, it's a whole different experience. We have to be humble, we have to be eager, we have to be prayerful, and we have to be determined, despite whatever the mind wants to do. Yeah, so it's absolute. In this statement by Iyengar, he said, japa's like tablets and kirtan's like injection. Well, both of them are giving us the medicine. Yeah. And so we look forward to chanting our japa as we look forward to kirtans too. Kirtan seems to be easier because everyone is together and the room is filled. But at the same time, when you're in japa, it's just you and Krishna. And it's nice. It's very personal, japa. We should not be overwhelmed with the difficulties that come in chanting. Because the tendency in Kali Yuga and the tendency in the conditioned souls is to see success based on what you can do. You can't see any results in japa. I'm spending 2 hours, but what did I get done? But if I finish my rounds, then I can do this, I can do that, I can do this, I can do that. And then at the end of the day, we look at whatever thing we did. But what about purification of the heart? That's what comes with the sadhana. The japa is that sadhana that's going to purify us. Which makes the rest of the day, what we say, fulfilling. Mm-hmm. When you're happy, chant. When you're unhappy, chant. When you're in between, chant. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, by chanting every day, one will chant always. So, what is he saying every day? That means every day do kirtan, every day do japa. Gradually, 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 purifying the heart, we'll develop a taste to want to chant more and more. We want that. We want to just chant, chant, chant. Even if you're worshipping the deity. You can't worship the deity unless you're chanting the holy names. There was one pujari. It was in Goloka Dham. This was many years ago. When the president of Goloka Dham came to me, and I was visiting there. This was back in the early part of the century. He said, Maharaj, I have this pujari. She's really the best. She does deity worship so nicely. She's always punctual. She's always thinking how to create nicer ways to worship the deity, decorations, dressing. But she doesn't chant rounds. And when I try to encourage her, she says there's 9 processes of bhakti, and archanam is one of them. So, you know, kirtan, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, padasevanam, archanam, vandanam, dasyam, sakyam, atmanivedanam. 9 ways of bhakti, and it says that each of the limbs of bhakti can be perfected for one's devotional success. In other words, one can become perfect. But the thing in, the acharyas give us the understanding that in this age, the other eight processes must be accompanied by the chanting of Hare Krishna. That's in the Shastras. That's spoken by Srila Prabhupada. So I mentioned to the president, I said, you know, you have to encourage her that, you know, to chant the holy name because it is the Yuga Dharma. But I said, don't try to push her out, let her continue with her service, but always encourage her to chant. And I said, if she doesn't, she'll eventually lose her enthusiasm for her service. Because Krishna, in the form of the deity, will kick her off the altar. You want to serve me in this way, but you're not serving my pure devotee who's telling you to chant the holy names. You can't serve me unless you serve my pure devotee. It's not possible. You're disobeying instructions of my pure devotee and his representatives also, and you want to approach me. Krishna says, I'm out of here. So that's what happened. Later, about a month later, I spoke to him again. I said, what happened? She left. No, I said, I didn't do anything. I just let her continue. And she left on her own. Yeah, so that's why if we don't chant the holy names of the Lord and we perform other services, we won't be able to remain enthusiastic or fixed in those other services. Everything depends on the holy name. You know, remember the president of Goloka Dham? His name was Goloka Dham. Do you remember him? Yeah, he left his body, actually. He's the one that was talking. He was such a nice devotee. It was like a jewel, that boy. It's an unfortunate accident he had, car accident. But, you know, so this is one example of many, the people that don't chant the holy names and try to serve. Because their service is about them, it's not about Krishna. How do you know if your service is about you or Krishna when it gets difficult? And you can't see any reason why you should do it, and you do it anyway, then it's for Krishna. Then it's for Krishna. And Krishna will put you in that situation just for that purification. And then when you just, all right, Krishna wants me to do it. It's the instructions of my spiritual master. I'm not inclined. I can't. I feel it's too hard. Whatever reason the mind is coming up with. And if you do it, then you're actually making a sacrifice. That's yajna. That's yajna. Because the difficulties in bhakti are the means to make fast advancement. When everything is easy, we can make advancement. But when you accept difficulties and you work through them and you stay steady in your service in the right consciousness, then you actually make progress. Because some anartha, consciousness that shouldn't be there is causing you to feel like that, and if you push through that, then you're destroying that anartha. You're destroying that negative consciousness. Because devotional service is what we say, it's Radharani. It's perfect. Any other questions? Yes, Prabhu, Devananda Pandit. We want to end soon because tomorrow is a full day.
Hare Krishna. Guru Maharaj, can in the same time exist faith in the holy name and inattentive chanting? Or if chanting is inattentive, this is not faith?
Inattentive chanting causes us to commit offenses. It's an offense in itself, and it causes us. And so, whatever faith we have, we're watering down that faith. Because faith is supported by knowledge, faith is supported by experience. Faith is supported by association. So your faith may be strong, but if you continue to chant inattentive, then you'll actually start to lose your enthusiasm for chanting. Or you find yourself in a pattern that you can't get out of. Inattention can create a pattern that is very difficult to break. Devotees who chant long-term inattentively can't, and sometimes will either give up their chanting or remain in a very neophyte position, just going through the motions of chanting. So when you see that there's some inattention there, then one should take the remedy. One should not allow inattention to continue. Because it could cause us to become less faithful. That faith, that lessening of faith will cause us to lose enthusiasm for association, for service, like that. It'll happen now just naturally. Because attentive chanting will bring us more enthusiasm, inattentive chanting will dampen our enthusiasm. So for a while you can go on, but not for a long while. After a while it becomes dangerous. I knew one devotee, he was helping other devotees become attentive. And he was telling me, I'm working with people who have been chanting inattentive for 20 years. And it's so hard to break their patterns. Because you fall into a pattern of inattention. That's why now we're, especially Satchinandana Maharaj, is coming up with different, what we say, ways to help us break that inattention that we can add to our chanting of the holy names. Like that, the Shastras also mention different things. So yeah, shouldn't allow it to go on. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Jiva Dharma how important it is to overcome this inattention. By chanting inattentively, we have a tendency to commit the other 10 offenses. When you chant attentively, the other 10 offenses, you reduce the tendency to commit offenses. That's how it works. Attentive chanting reduces other offenses. Inattentive chanting causes us to commit other offenses. Because when you're chanting attentively, you're getting the nectar of Krishna's name. So you have to practice that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, if you want to make significant progress in devotional service, and if you don't know where to put your energy, put it here. Put it here. Put it here on attentive chanting. And then he says your endeavors will bring great fruit. And attentive chanting, we'll speak about that in the whole class, is called pramada. What is mada? Mada means madness. Pramada means crazy, and umada means complete craziness. Prabhupada describes umada as like a person takes off all their clothes and runs outside screaming. That's umada. So one level lower than that is pramada. That's inattentive chanting. We'll get into that. Because as soon as I start, we might not stop. But try to work on your attentive chanting. It's very important. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.